Welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. Cure your craving, stop in today. I am your host, Scott Wright of the Oklahoman. This is the Oklahoman's Oklahoma State Football Podcast. I am joined now by Barry Trammell. Barry, we visited with Mike Gundy and some players. No news coming out about the quarterbacks, and it feels like that's probably not anytime in the near future that anything is going to change. Did you have a different impression at all?
No, we're going to find out when Oregon State finds out. When the college football world finds out, when somebody trots out onto the field in Corvallis on that Friday night. So, you know, Mike says there's no advantage for the in keeping the opponent in the dark, but I got to feel like he doesn't really believe that. I think he probably feels like we'll keep them guessing as long as everybody else. And the truth could be that what we've speculated, that they really don't know, and they're just going to let ball games settle the issue.
Yeah, it's I feel more and more that way. Nothing in the latest comments from Gundy or any players that lead you to believe one way or another, one guy or another is pulling ahead in this race. I do think I asked Gundy about this, and I do think that the amount of reps that guys are getting in practice has to start to become an issue or a concern fairly soon. If your first team guys, let's say in a typical year, in a Mason Rudolph year, that your number one guy is getting 70% of the work in practice, let's make it 80 just for this scenario. Now you're giving two guys 40% or each 40% of the work, and that's a guy that you're going to be relying on eventually to be your quarterback. And I think that's got to be something when you've got guys that haven't played, at least in this offense, something that's got to be really concerning right now. Gundy joked that his concern started in spring, but now we're down to just a couple of weeks away from game time. The amount of practice that these guys have had in the offense has been limited because this quarterback competition has dragged on for as long as it has, and that's got to be a little bit of a detriment, I would think, Barry.
Well, it's a problem because of modern football. You know, I asked Gundy about the playing two quarterbacks, and there used to be teams in all levels, even in the NFL a little bit, that would platoon quarterbacks, not just short yardage the way we saw with J.W. Walsh. Mm-hmm. But why has that fallen out of favor in the last 20 years, 30 years? And Gundy said it's a practice issue because the propensity and the standard now is for the first teamer to get 90% of the reps or whatever the number is.
Right.
And it's worrisome when those guys are now getting 40, as you said, each or whatever. To me, that is a problem. On the other hand, it seems to me like it increases depth. You know, and we've seen, you know, Gundy said something along the lines of only twice in the last 7 years has OSU gone through a year in which, you know, quarterback made it all the way through.
Right.
And that is, when you look back, like it, you know, in 11 with Whedon, he was fine. But in 12, you know, there was a merry-go-round with Wes Lunt getting hurt. And then Walsh had the foot injury in 13, I guess it was, or 14, whatever year that was. So we've seen guys get hurt quite a bit in and out, and when you're able to use both guys in practice a lot, you've got two guys ready to go, so there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, there absolutely is, and you know, Drew Brown is not necessarily what I would classify as a dual threat or a running quarterback, but he does have the ability to be mobile and use his feet to his advantage when he can. And Spencer Sanders is definitely a mobile guy who will take off and run when he gets the opportunity. And he's also a guy that's had some injury issues in his past. So the chances that whoever the number one guy comes out of this race, makes it all the way through the season are probably not as great as they were for Mason Rudolph as a senior, or Taylor Cornelius, who was a guy who was able to really absorb contact well and those sorts of things. So the chances of both these guys needing to play, not just to settle this debate, but because one guy has to come out of the game at some point, seem to be probably leaning that direction. And Gundy sort of alluded to that as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we'll see them both play in Corvallis and go from there. Maybe one of them wins the job that night. The concern is one doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the next week's McNeese, and that doesn't mean anything.
No.
And the next week's at Tulsa. So maybe somebody wins the job that night, but the next week's Texas. So, you know, the Cowboys are not, you know, gently sort of floating into the Big 12 schedule.
Right.
It gets hot and heavy very quickly.
Yeah, I've sort of described the non-conference season as sort of a runway where you're taxiing out there for a few games, and then boom, you take off and it's real life real quick. So that's sort of how I've kind of looked at these first three games, because like you said, if they don't have something decided by the night they leave Corvallis, it's not a great situation, because you're not going to learn anything against McNeese State, and by Tulsa you'd really like to have your guy out there being your guy, so that when you go into Texas you're not confused about whose team this is.
Right, because it sounds like, as sort of as cool as it might be for somebody like me to think about and write about, it sounds like the two quarterback platoon system is not what they want. They want something besides that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
in an offense like this, there's so much that's predicated on timing, or you know, seeing different looks from a defense and being able to read that and make the right call, and so many things that you need to see. You know, that I don't think they want a two quarterback situation going on for very long at all. So well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about things other than the quarterback. This is the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. We are back on the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by columnist Barry Trammell. Barry, the defensive line was another popular topic in our last visit with Mike Gundy and the players up there. Your initial expectations, have they changed at all on what we could see or what to expect on this defensive line?
No, I think it's going to be a little rough going. What I found interesting was Mike today talked about the future and how he said, I think next year everybody's going to be really excited about our defensive mm-hmm. line, because we got some good players. They're just all unproven, all untested,
right,
all inexperienced. He said next year I think we'll be in really good shape and sort of back to where we have been in recent years. To me, if that's true, that's a very good sign, because you know what Oklahoma State's experienced last 3 or 4 years with a lot of defensive line depth, that's unprecedented really in the last 20, 30 years of OSU football. So if that's true, that bodes well for the future. It doesn't make for a great situation now. You know, the Cowboys have gotten a little bit accustomed to quality defensive line play. And this year, with the linebackers very thin, you know, it could be a danger spot, and that could be a place where the Cowboys get dented pretty good. But if these guys can sort of grow quickly, it certainly is a great thing for the future.
And that Oregon State game in particular could be a unique test for this group, because they do have – Oregon State has a good running back. They've got a veteran quarterback, some guys who can make good decisions and make some plays against this defense up front to give them a little bit more trouble and probably neutralize Oklahoma State's strength, which is in the secondary. So that – will be a unique test that Oregon State presents, more so than your typical Big 12 team. But
do you think? Let me ask you, Scotty. It appears the Cowboys are a little more fortified at end than they are tackle.
I would definitely say so. Primarily at that strong side position the weak side position that Jordan Brailford played last year. Even losing Brailford, they still got a lot of experience out of Mike Scott and Brock Martin, and they really like what those two guys can do. Now the other side, it's going to be some newcomers. Tyler Lacy, I think, is probably leading the way to become the starter there. With Amadou Fofana, a junior college transfer, behind him. But they're different types of players than what Oklahoma State had a year ago, where you had a guy like Jarrell Owens over there or Cole Walterscheid. Now you've got Tyler Lacy, Amadou Fofana, who are 280-pound defensive ends with some strength and some quickness that gives them both a chance to be a different type of impact than the guys who are playing there last year. So that's going to be a unique look, I think, from this defense, particularly when they go to that three-man front and they move Brock Martin or Mike Scott off the ball and do some different things with that guy. It's going to make that defensive line look a lot different. But as Gundy alluded to, the youth of this group is pretty promising, because Mike Scott is a junior college transfer who's now a senior, and Kyle Jr. is a grad transfer who is a senior. Everybody else is back off of this group next year. So, looking ahead that far, it is an exciting view for Oklahoma State fans. Mike Scott is a guy who, though, looking to the year ahead, who I think could be a difference maker. You look at his body. You know, we didn't get to talk to him last year, but you could see him, and he looked too skinny to be a defensive end, and he doesn't have that same look about him now. He looks more physically developed, and has kept his speed. I think that will make him a guy who could really have a breakout season. He and Brock Martin both are different types of guys, but I think have a chance to be impactful in that spot.
Well, one thing that Gundy said that I found interesting, talking about Mike Scott, he said he really doesn't have a clue what he might do. He said
right.
He might have one sack and four tackles, or he could have eight sacks and 60 tackles.
Yeah.
So if Gundy doesn't know, it's pretty wide open for all of us.
Yeah.
So that to me will be when Oregon State has the ball, that'd be as good a place as any to sort of put your eyes and see how that D line holds up against the Power Five offensive line. Now Oregon State's on the bottom end of the Power Five. Let's not pretend otherwise.
Right.
But still, it's an offense that has scored in some games at a high volume against. Against equitable type competition. So it'll be a fun season opener, I think, on both sides of the ball for that reason.
The linebacker position is also a little bit fascinating, because they've got some guys who are a little bit banged up right now. Calvin Bunnage still hasn't been going through a full practice. Devin Harper is coming off an off-season surgery that could keep him out for a couple of games possibly. That position, I think, will be very interesting to see how it develops early in the season. Who the guys are that step in to provide depth, and where it goes as well. All right, let's take one more break, and we'll come back and wrap this thing up. I am Scott Wright, your host. This is the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. We are back on the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by Barry Trammell. Barry, running back, an intriguing position. At the media golf outing, I played golf with John Wozniak, and someone told him that they felt like Oklahoma State could be better at running back than they were a year ago. And he had kind of a funny look, and he said, you know we lost Justice Hill, right? And he's right in a way. He's also very excited about the group that he's got with Chuba Hubbard, L.D. Brown, who we've seen a little bit of what he can do. But then behind them, it's a bunch of unknowns. When you look at the running back group, reason for excitement, reason for concern? Anything unique that you see there?
Well, I agree with Wozniak. There's no reason to believe they'll be better at running back this year. You're not just losing Justice Hill, an NFL caliber running back, but you lost J.D. King, who for mm-hmm. most of the year was your backup.
Right.
So it's sort of silly to think they might be better. Chuba Hubbard has outstanding potential, showed great, you know, great guns in the Liberty Bowl, looked like, you know, the next running star for the Cowboys. But the depth behind him is, you know, shaky. So I like the top end with Chuba Hubbard, but beyond that, you know, L.D. Brown was fourth team guy last year and did not really get anybody excited ever, as far as I can remember, in his time here. So, yeah, some young guys that could be good, but I'm not crazy about the overall outlook in terms of what the Cowboys have been accustomed to.
One thing we don't know about Chuba Hubbard is how well his body is going to hold up over the full course of a season. He was the starter for three games last year, the primary back for four, again, if you include the Bedlam game after Justice Hill got hurt on his fifth carry of the day. You look at the amount of carries he had over 120 plus the number of kickoff returns that he had, and he handled the ball a fair amount. He took a good amount of punishment, but we don't know how he's going to hold up getting the workload that Justice Hill got over the last 2 years. Now, one thing that they have done to minimize some of that is that they've pulled him off of kickoff return. Now, he was clearly the team's best kickoff returner a year ago, averaged over 22 yards per return. Have things changed in the kickoff return world that you don't necessarily want to put your best kickoff returner back there anymore?
I would not put Chuba Hubbard at kickoff return for this reason. The game has changed. Teams are more savvy. You know, you go back, you go back in time, and I don't mean the 1940s. I mean 5-10 years ago, teams were not as adept at, you know, everybody tried to kick it out of the end zone, and that was their kickoff return defense.
Right.
Now teams have added something, which is the placement kickoff, pooching kickoffs inside the five and the corners and whatnot, and really negated long kickoff returns. I don't have the numbers, but I think you'd find that there are fewer big plays in the kickoff return game than there were in the old days of 5-10 years ago, when Justin Gilbert and Parrish Cox were returning kicks for OSU to great acclaim. So without the threat of bigger plays, I would not risk Chuba Hubbard. There's, you know, I think there's an idea that players are more susceptible on kickoff returns to injury. That's, you know, you can debate that either way, but I think it stands to reason that it might be true. So I would not risk it. I would keep Chuba Hubbard strictly for offense.
You know, it's interesting when you think about it. It's a little surprising that it took people as long as it did to start thinking about the placement kick. Like for years, it was just kick the ball as far as you could, and if you had a guy that could get it to the end zone, great. If not, you had some guy catching it at the 1 or 2 yard line, and he was gonna run it out, and that's when you had big plays. But
think about it. If you kick it in the middle of the field, the guy really has three options in which to go. He can go left, yeah, right, or straight up the middle.
Yeah.
If you kick it in the corner, he has one option.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to veer back towards the middle of the field because you don't want to run up the sideline.
Right.
Then just
exactly.
a bump.
Yes.
You know, the greatest tackler in football history is the sideline. They got way more tackles than in Dick Butkus or Tommy Nobis. So, you know, the placement kickoff is a great weapon for teams that are kicking off. And it's hard to get a big return anymore. I wouldn't risk Chuba Hubbard for that.
All right, let's finish it up, Barry, with this, some scheduling news that has come out. A few games being added or moved. First of all, an addition to the Arkansas series. They had announced the home and home in the mid and late 2020s. Now, early 2030s, we've added a series with another home and home series with Arkansas, 2032 and 2033, if I remember correctly. So, more games with Arkansas. I think that's a fun series.
It's a fun series. It's an historic series. They played most years between 1951 and 1982, I think it was.
Yeah.
I think they've played 33 times. 30 of those games were played in Little Rock. So it was not a historically advantageous series for OSU. For some reason, Oklahoma State played the second-class citizen and agreed to go to Little Rock every year. Madness when you look back at it, mm-hmm. but that's what they did. They finally got Arkansas to come to Stillwater. Cowboys spanked them pretty good. And Razorback said, we don't need any more of this. So the series died. But it's been revived, and it's a good series. It needs to be played. You know, the truth is Arkansas fits in better geographically with the Big 12 than it does with the SEC. The Kansas schools, OU and OSU, the Texas schools. It's a shame Arkansas isn't in the Big 12, but this is the next best thing. So I think it's a fun series, and I'm glad to see it revived.
Also, as part of some of the changes coming up much sooner than the Arkansas series edition is the 2021 season opener against Rice. That game has actually been overtaken by Arkansas. Arkansas will play Rice to open the 2021 season. In its place, Oklahoma State gets Missouri State, which is who Arkansas was scheduled to play at that time. That's actually just moving a game for Oklahoma State because they were scheduled to play Missouri State in the 2022 non-conference season. And also, so as part of that, to fill that gap, they picked up another opponent that Arkansas dropped, which was Arkansas Little Rock. So
Pine Bluff.
All right, I'm sorry. Yes, Arkansas Pine Bluff. Thank you very much, Barry.
Oh, the Cowboys and the Razorbacks would play Arkansas Little Rock at a moment's notice.
Yes, they would.
They don't actually have a football team.
No.
But that's why they would love to schedule them.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's a bummer because that trade for OSU, basically you're trading away Rice and getting Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Yeah, exactly.
In truth, the difference in those two teams is probably not much.
Mm-hmm.
But Rice is certainly a bigger name. It's an historic name, played in the Southwest Conference for 60, 70, 80 years. So, you know, you hate to see that to go down to a 1AA opponent. And on the other end, what a bummer, you know, you can't get the Razorbacks to play in-state foes. They won't play Arkansas State. But here they had Pine Bluff, and now they're not even playing Pine Bluff.
Right.
So what a bummer.
It is, and an extra FCS school added to future scheduling for Oklahoma State at a time when they're doing better at scheduling a big FBS Power 5 opponent. You hate to see another FCS school pop up on the schedule, but at times it feels inevitable with at least one of those one per year really is what it just about feels like. So, all right, Barry, I think that'll do it for this edition of the Cowboy Chronicles. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Be sure to be subscribing on Apple Podcasts. Jump in, find me on Twitter at ScottWrightOK or email me swright@oklahoman.com with questions for our next podcast. We'll dive into the listener mailbag once again, as always, a fun segment here on the Cowboy Chronicles. And as I said, subscribe, rate us, leave comments, whatever you like to do. We appreciate all of the interaction and all of the listeners. So thank you once again for joining us on the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. Cure your craving. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com.